The sermon that I'm going to be giving here has required quite a bit of research and study. Some of the material that I went through, is on the internet. I used, for instance, Google Maps to look at distances between sites in Jerusalem. Very interesting. But here are just a few of the material that I have. This is Glimpses of Glory by Carl Gallups. He's a top 60 author on Amazon. This one is Unmasking the Chaldean Spirit by Rabbi Zev Porat, Messianic Rabbi. I'm going to be referring to an article in Biblical Archaeological Review entitled Taking a Sling. And I'm also using this book on Jerusalem, History, Archaeology, and Apologetic Proof of Scripture. So that's just some of the things. As I said, there's other material that is just in PDF form or on the internet, so I wouldn't be able to bring all that in here and show it to you. But anyway, that kind of gives you a little bit of an idea of where I'm going with this. The title of the sermon is David and Goliath. David and Goliath. Now, Wikipedia states that, and I'm going to do air quotes, David and Goliath has become a popular phrase denoting an underdog situation. You probably heard that yourself. However, was David the underdog, or was Goliath the real underdog? Now, granted, Goliath was a giant of a man. He was bigger and stronger than David, no question about that. But that doesn't consider other factors. David knew the God of Israel would be with him. Ultimately, then, the battle was the Lord's, not David's. David was also a slinger. Not a swinger now, okay. Slinger. Those who use a sling as a weapon were called slingers. God will use those who have prepared themselves for his service. And David was prepared for this battle. Let's examine the account over in 1 Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17. First draft of this sermon, I had the whole chapter I was going to read, but then it just was too much, so I decided for time's sake just to read some of the verses in the chapter and make comments on them. So let's begin with verse number 4. It says, "And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath." That's important, from Gath, "whose height was 6 cubits and a span." So that means that Goliath was about 9 feet, 9 inches tall. He could play on a good basketball team, couldn't he? That was really tall. He was a champion. He was a champion warrior who would fight in a single combat to death as a stand-in for the entire army. This concept of being a champion is exactly what that means, that you're a stand-in for the whole army and you will fight to the death. Saul was the natural choice to fight Goliath. Saul stood head and shoulders over his countrymen, so he was quite a tall individual and therefore was the logical choice for the Israelite army. But as you probably are familiar with the story, Saul had no desire to confront the giant. Dropping down to verse 6, And he, that is Goliath, had bronze armor on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now, Goliath's primary weapon here was the bronze javelin. His armor alone, they think, weighed 125 pounds. Such a foot soldier would have disdained a slinger who had no armor. Turning down a little bit further to verse 16, it says, "And the Philistine drew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening." Yes, Goliath went out every morning, every evening, and taunted the army of Israel for 40 days. Now, some of you that may ring a bell. In the Bible, a period of 40 days has deep meaning. For instance, it rained 40 days during the flood of Noah. What was it doing? Wiping out the wicked people, okay? Moses spent 40 days and nights in the wilderness when given the Ten Commandments. In the New Testament, Jesus was tempted for 40 days and 40 nights. There were 40 days between Jesus' resurrection and his ascension. I'm sure that all of you remember the story of the Israelites wandering for 40 years in the wilderness. Well, why 40 years? Because the spies, remember Joshua and Caleb and the other 10, they spied out the land for 40 days and brought an evil report. Only Joshua and Caleb were in favor of going in to conquer the land. And God punished Israel 40 years, a year for every day that they spied out the land. So this period of 40 days is found in about 24 times in the, throughout the Bible. I did a search on my electronic Bible, and it came up with that. So 40 is something that is significant when you find it mentioned that many times in the Bible. Dropping down to verse 26 then, we'll read, "Then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, 'What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel?'" You see, there was a reproach against Israel because no one would fight. "For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" You see, one who was a pagan was called uncircumcised as an expression of contempt. I sometimes wonder, was Goliath demons possessed? He cursed Israel with his names of his gods. Was he demonically inspired? Could Satan maybe even have been in his at that time? Because remember, Satan entered into Judas. Just a question. But this man was a vile, vile individual. And David saw the situation not from a physical, but from a divine perspective. Here was an opportunity for the God of Israel to display his power. Dropping down to verse 36. David says, "Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defiled the armies of the living God." You see, David's past victories over the lion and the bear gave him the faith and confidence to trust God for victory over Goliath. David saw this situation from a theological rather than a military perspective. Dropping down to verse 40. Then he, that is David, took his staff in his hand, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag, in a pouch which he had, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. David carefully selected the stones for shape, size, and uniformity. Stones and larger rocks, called boulders, are often found in riverbeds and creeks, and they are rounded, smooth-shaped, due to the erosion from the water. Now, you probably are aware of this, both from the Old and the New Testament, but in many scriptures, the God of Israel is called a rock. And a rock is what will crush the head of Goliath. There's symbolism here. Dropping down to verse 46 and verse 47 now. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you, and notice this, and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into my hands. That's what he told Goliath. What a witness. You see, David will take the head of Goliath, but will leave his body for the birds and the wild beasts to eat. We're going to talk about what he did with that head. Verse 49. Then David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone. And he swung it and struck the Philistine in his forehead, so that the stone sank into his forehead and he fell on his face to the earth. You see, the stone hit Goliath's forehead with a speed of about, they estimate, 113 miles per hour, which is faster than a typical fastball in baseball. You don't want to get hit with a fastball right in the head. Such a hit would inflict significant damage. Dropping down to verse 51. Therefore, David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword, and drew it out of its sheath, and killed him. Cut off his head with it. Now, since David had no sword, he took Goliath's sword and used it to cut off Goliath's head. Now, from this account, we can see that slingers were very skilled warriors. Their accuracy was actually incredible. Roman slingers practiced using targets at a distance of about 200 yards. That's the length of 2 football fields. That was where their targets were. They could accurately hit a person from that distance. Turn over to Judges chapter 20, and we'll read about these slingers in verse 16. Judges 20, and verse 16. Judges 20:16. Among all this people were 700 select men who were left-handed. I never could figure out to this day why they were all left-handed. But I always think of Penny when she's a left-hander. And Olivia. Everyone could sling a stone, listen to this, at a hair's breadth and not miss. They were incredibly accurate. So Goliath came against David with a javelin. And such a weapon had an effective range up to 70 yards. However, a sling had a military effectiveness as far away as 200 to 400 yards. Thus, David could confront Goliath within his effective range while standing outside the range of Goliath's javelin. That's why they had this nice little chat out there. David's weapon, of course, was a sling. And it was probably made from woven sheep's wool. And there's even symbolism in that. It had two cords. And at the end of one cord was a loop that the slinger slid over a finger on the slinging hand. And there was a pouch for a stone between the two cords. The stone had to be very smooth to allow accuracy. And that's why, of course, David picked up smooth stones from the brook. The slinger whirled the sling overhead or sometimes by side, releasing one cord to launch the projectile through the air. David's sling gave him the decisive advantage of staying out of Goliath's range while still allowing him to hit Goliath's forehead with enough force to penetrate his skull. You see, David's stone hit Goliath's skull with bone-breaking force, knocking him unconscious. David then ran to Goliath, pulled out his sword, cut off his head with his own sword. Yeah. Now this event has prophetic significance. David, you see, is a type of Christ. In fact, Christ is son of David. David was sent by his father, Jesse, to where the troops were, just as Jesus is sent by his father. Goliath, you see, is a type of Satan. He may have even possessed him. David killing Goliath is a symbolic picture of the defeat of Satan by Jesus. The conflict is a biblical type of the prophecy we find in Genesis 3, and verse 15, that very familiar prophecy. Genesis 3:15. And I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. So here, David bruises the heel, the head of Goliath. Now remember, David came from the area of Bethlehem. Same thing, Jesus was born in Bethlehem area. Just 7 miles northeast of the town of Bethlehem is the Mount of Olives. And the Mount of Olives has three ridges. The southernmost ridge is called the Mount of Olives. But there are two others. The northern ridge of the mountain is called Mount Scopus, S-C-O-P-U-S. And the probable site of the Old Testament known as Nob, or N-O-B, is the middle ridge, at the Mount of Olives. So there's three ridges. Now, back to David and Goliath. David took Goliath's armor, sword, and his head to a location near Jerusalem known as Nob, N-O-B. Later, we find that when David was on the run from Saul, he returned to Nob to retrieve Goliath's sword. That place during Christ's ministry was well known as the place of the skull. The name has nothing to do with the geological formation near the Jerusalem bus station. Both Sarah and I have stood in front of that, looking at the buses down below and taking pictures of this place that is called the place of the skull. But the name has nothing to do with a geological formation near a Jerusalem bus station. I've looked at that site, and I can tell you right now, that is not where Christ was crucified. He was crucified at Golgotha. And Golgotha is the place of the skull. The skull of Goliath. Goliath was from Gath. And the term is a corruption of Hebrew for Goliath Gath. Goliath is where David buried, Golgotha, I should say, is where David buried Goliath's head. He buried his head on the Mount of Olives. The symbolism and prophetic message here is unmistakable. On the night of his betrayal, Jesus was praying in the Garden of Gethsemane, which is partway up the Mount of Olives. Not only was Christ crucified on the Mount of Olives, on or near the place of the skull at Nob, but he was also buried very near where he was crucified, according to the scriptures. In a private garden tomb recognized today by many archaeologists and biblical scholars. It was probably at or near the same location that Jesus delivered the famous Sermon on the Mount being the Mount of Olives. Jesus was not buried in the tourist site called the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is actually built on a former pagan temple. Or was he buried in the so-called garden tomb in the heart of Jerusalem? I have a picture, Sarah, standing in front of that tourist site. Let me read to you from the Biblical Archaeological Review titled Resurrection Revisited. What if everything we think we know about the passion, crucifixion, and resurrection of Jesus is wrong? That's the jaw-dropping possibility that comes from reading the work of some of the world's most preeminent Bible and archaeological scholars. Of course, there's always been fierce debate between scholars and theologians about every aspect of Jesus' life and death. But sometimes even the most well-known sides of a debate demand new scrutiny. For instance, which is really the tomb of Jesus? The tomb in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre or the Garden Tomb? The Church of the Holy Sepulchre is hallowed by tradition, and that goes back at least to the 4th century when the Emperor Constantine built the first church there. But in the 19th century, Western Protestants regarded the Catholic Holy Sepulchre Church in a densely built-up area in the Old City as unsuitably located and gave their loyalty to a two-chamber burial cave outside the city wall known as the Garden Tomb. At last, archaeology and science can weigh in. According to archaeologist Gabriel Barkay, B-A-R-K-A-Y, the Garden Tomb is dated to the 8th or 7th centuries BCE and was not in use during Jesus' time. And while that may be a disappointment to anyone who has visited the Garden Tomb on a pilgrimage, it's rewarding to serious students of biblical history to learn the undisputed truth. Wow. Messianic Rabbi Zeb Porah, who wrote this book here, gives tours in Israel. And by the way, he speaks fluent English, and he's also fluent in Hebrew, and is a trained, he was trained in rabbinical scholarship before he recognized Yeshua, Jesus, as the Messiah. One spot on his tour is a little-known tomb at the Church of the Pater, that is P-A-T-E-R, Noster, N-O-S-T-E-R, on the Mount of Olives. This tomb, which had a rolling stone, and I can't go into all the details about rolling versus sliding and all of that, but there's the whole issue on that one. It's where Zeb Porah believes the authentic burial site of Jesus is located. It is very likely that Jesus was resurrected from that tomb on the Mount of Olives. Later, he ascended into heaven, where? From the Mount of Olives, Acts 1 verse 12. Finally, Jesus will return where? Mount of Olives. Turn over to Zechariah 14 and we'll read verse 4. Zechariah 14 and verse 4. And in that day, his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which faces Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall split in two from east to west. Some archaeologists speculate, I wonder if we'll find that skull there when it splits. Making a very large valley. Half of the mountain shall move toward the north and half toward the south. You see, from the defeat of Goliath by David to the crucifixion of Jesus on the cross at the place of the skull on the Mount of Olives, to Christ the warrior king returning to the Mount of Olives to deliver a head-crushing blow to the dragon, the Bible is consistent from the first prophecy of the Redeemer in Genesis 3 to the return of Jesus on the Mount of Olives. Jesus Christ is returning to this earth, and when he returns, God will give him the enduring throne of David. Note what Mary is told in Luke 1, verses 31 and 33. Luke 1, verses 31 to 33. By the way, this is the exact lift out of the latest message from the United President that just got sent out. And behold, you will conceive in your womb and bring forth a son, and shall call his name Jesus. And he will be great, and he will be called the Son of the Highest, and the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David. And he will reign over the house of Jacob forever. And of his kingdom, there will be no end. So I hope that you might have a little bit different idea of the story of David and Goliath.